at the time that Mr. Height entered his plea, there was an oral plea agreement, and the transcript or the quotation of that agreement appears on pages 8 and 9 of the statement of facts in my opening brief. The core of the agreement was that the government would consider a granting relief or moving for relief from the mandatory minimum under 18 U.S.C. 3553E.
So, Mr. Stevens, the part of that transcript that I would like you to explain occurs here, where the court says, he's bending over backwards, he says, Mr. Stevens, I want to be very clear that we are all on the same page here. So with that explanation from the government, which is Mr. Schmidt saying that we're authorizing the court to go below the 180, but we are, in fact, recommending the 188. So he says, with that explanation from the government, that representation, are you suggesting that that is something different from what the government had represented to you or promised to you at the time Mr. Height made his change of plea? You respond, no. With the understanding, you said that you understand that the motion does authorize you to make, if you're prepared to accept that as authority to go below the mandatory minimum, I think that satisfied the requirement. And then the judge nails it down even further. He says, all right, so you are satisfied that so long as the court understands that it has the authority to depart below the mandatory minimum of 180 months, based on the government's substantial assistance motion, based on that, you are not suggesting that the government has breached any promise or representation it made at the time of the change of plea. Is that correct? Can you say that's correct? I don't see how that isn't a waiver of this argument
It was correct at that point, but the government didn't stick to it.
The government didn't ever withdraw the substantial assistance motion. It just recommended a 188 sentence.
No, when the court presented its calculation of the guidelines of the low end of 168 months, it then went on to say that it was placing a floor on the guideline calculation based on the mandatory minimum, and that was thus raising the floor to the 180-month mandatory minimum.
But what is it that the government did to make that happen? The government made the 3553E motion. Did it ever change that position?
Yes, when it came time to actually implement or the sentence itself.
They didn't want a sentence below 180 months. The court may have said 180 because at one point the pre-sentence report said that before all of this stuff was going on. But the government wanted 188. Why would they complain about the judge mentioning 180 when what they want is 188 anyway?
What the court initially said was they were setting the low end of the guidelines at 168. Now,
Well, who did something wrong here, the government or the district court judge?
No, the government. By not at that point, I think they had an obligation to renew their motion and say, we are authorizing you to go below the 180 month.
But the judge knows that. Do you think the judge just suffered amnesia from this earlier point that I read from? He goes over and over it.
No, but it's the government's obligation to enforce the agreement, and that's I raised the point initially to make sure that the government was not just moving for relief from the guidelines under at that point we got assurances that the government was indeed moving for relief from the mandatory minimum. Then when the sentencing range is calculated, the government doesn't make the motion at that point.
Even if you didn't explicitly waive your argument that the government breached the plea agreement during your initial exchange with the district court, it became very clear within a matter of minutes that the government was not going to recommend a sentence, you know, below the statutory minimum. What I'm wondering is why then didn't you raise the question of breach to the district court at that point?
I thought that I had. And he asked me, are you renewing your prior objections? I said yes.
I'm very mixed up. I'm afraid that I'm very mixed up because what I got from all of this was that, as Judge Wood noted, the court asked whether, with the explanation from the government and the representation from the government, were you suggesting that something different from what the government had represented to you or promised to you was going on, and you said no twice.
That's correct.
So I don't get it.
Well, and later on in the sentencing transcript, and this is on pages 24, lines 13 and 14, the court first calculates a guideline range with the low end at 168 months. And then the court, on the basis of the mandatory minimum, raises that floor to 180 months.
But even on page 24, which I'm looking at that you've just referred it to, the court says, again, I would note that the government's substantial assistance motion authorizes the court to sentence below the 180 month. And so the court recognizes its ability. So it still knows then, on page 24, when does it forget?
When it moves it to the 180-month, and the government doesn't move for relief from that mandatory minimum.
But
that is the precise...
They at that point. Don't you think they thought that was already done? They were,
no, because...
They were defending their 188 recommendation.
Well, I mean, they are riding two horses at once, but I think they have an obligation to go below the 180 months and make that as a part of the motion.
Save your time.
All right. Okay.
Okay. Come on up, Ms. Kirchhoff, and help us. Can I just start you off? Even, well, say your name.
My name is Emily Kirchhoff, representing the plaintiff, Appley, United States. Good morning.
Okay. Now, tell me this. In your experience, is a district court likely to sentence below a statutory minimum on the basis of a defendant's assistance to the government if the government, in fact, represents the assistance, does not warrant a sentence below the statutory minimum? And, you know, if not, what's the value of a promise by the government to permit the court to go below the statutory minimum, but then recommend that the court not do so? And I don't know what the government is doing asking courts to permit anything, you know.
Right.
Doesn't make courts happy.
And I believe that under Section 3553E, that is what the government needs to do, is make the motion so that the district court has the authority to do so. As far as whether we wanted to go ahead and recommend a sentence then below the mandatory minimum, I believe the recommendation of 188 months was more a reflection of the Section 3553A factors. And the government complied with the agreement by filing the Section 3553E motion, but then in consideration of the 3553A factors, believed that a sentence in the middle of the guideline range that took into account the authority to depart below the mandatory minimum was appropriate.
Okay. Thanks.
I mean, the concern, of course, is that the government's talking out of both sides of its mouth, because if it's a correct 3553E motion, one thinks that the government must have thought that the defendant's substantial assistance warranted sentencing below the level established by statute. And then you turn around and say, well, we're actually just kidding. We don't really think that. And so there's a troublesome inconsistency.
And I believe that the argument with the departure and whether or not it was warranted was focused a lot more on guidelines section 5K1.1 and making sure or arguing that only a one-level departure in base offense level was appropriate.
No, I understand that you have your 3553A argument, but looking at the overall intent of this oral agreement that the government and Mr. Height made, to say that you're going to move on the basis of substantial assistance, and actually, it's so unnecessary. All you had to do, you said, you know, you'd evaluate the assistance, and it was in your sole discretion, and all sorts of things were built in there, which are very commonly built in. So if instead of filing this phony motion, you know, you just said, you know, we've evaluated in our sole discretion, we've concluded that Mr. Height didn't come forth in a way that warranted a 3553 motion, end of discussion. We wouldn't be here. It's that the government, you know, confers power on the district court by this motion that it doesn't really mean. It doesn't think, in the end, that something below the statutory minimum is appropriate. So there's a little bit of duplicity in it.
And I agree that the government originally, the agreement was to consider filing the motion, so it was under no obligation to file the motion.
No, what the government should have said is, you know, here's where we are today, but we've got to see that, you know, the Section 3553 situation before we are certain. And then that gives a defendant, you know, because the defendant knows what, you know, you may not know, and the probation officer may not know what those 3553A are going to be, but the defendant does know. Mm-hmm. And so the defendant can make a more reasoned decision. I do have a terrible feeling, it's just awful to have this feeling, that there are too many situations that we see where the wool has been pulled over defendants' eyes. And that wool is 90% cotton. So it's just that there's a lot that's very bothersome.
And I think the government's position is that any argument has been waived at this point because Height's counsel recognized after the government had explained that notwithstanding the 3553E motion, that it was recommending a sentence above the mandatory minimum, Height's counsel recognized that that was in full compliance with the plea agreement memorialized at the change of plea hearing.
So do you have any comment on counsel's argument that after that exchange took place, something happened? There was a reference to a more 180 months later on.
Yes.
And I guess counsel was saying that somehow superseded the remarks that he had made earlier.
And I disagree because on page, both page 18 of the sentencing hearing transcript and page 24, when the district court kind of goes through a step-by-step calculation of the applicable guideline range, it states directly after stating that the guideline range becomes 180 to 210 months as a result of the mandatory minimum, it goes on to state that it has the authority to depart below that minimum on the basis of the government's motion. So there was no reason to think that the 3553E motion had been withdrawn or was not being considered by the district court.
Okay.
If the panel has no more questions, we'll rest on our briefs.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Mr. Stevens, how much time? 2 minutes.
The agreement had to do with 3553E. We were not talking about guideline range. We were not talking about 3553A factors. The sole point was if he provided substantial assistance, they would move for relief. And he did provide substantial assistance. He turned in all the drug dealers who'd been supplying his habit over all of this period of time. And the government said, in its motion that he provided substantial assistance. Then when you come right down to the point where is there going to be a mandatory minimum in place, the government remains silent and lets that floor sit there without moving. And that's exactly what they were talking about, guideline range. They were talking about 3553 factors. That wasn't their agreement. And that's.
Thanks so much. Okay. You were appointed, weren't you, Mr. Stevens?
Yes, ma'am.
Let's thank you for helping us out on this case. Thanks so much.
Okay. Yeah.
Thank you. Well, and thanks to the government, too. All right. Take care. Case taken under advisement.